Welcome to Dugout Dish Podcast. We have a special guest today. Keith, you ready for this one?
Ready. Fired up.
We got Columbia Associate Head Coach Dan Tischler with us today. Excited to have him. Had a ton of success at Columbia and throughout his coaching career, and a big piece of that success is recruiting, and I think he's going to be able to give us some really good insights. So, Dan, thanks for coming, man. Appreciate your time.
Oh, awesome. Appreciate being here with you guys and being able to talk a little bit. I had to make sure I was prepared. I did some homework and listened to the first two episodes to make sure I knew how you guys handle yourselves conversationally, because I haven't gotten enough in the last 11 years.
Yeah, fair enough. We'll kick it off, Dan. Give a quick intro to everybody listening. I mean, you've been doing this a while, you know, as a player and as a coach. I think it's important that people, you know, have an idea of what you've accomplished, because it's a pretty good list.
Sure. So I was a Division III player. I pitched at Franklin and Marshall College, small Division III school in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Centennial Conference school, and never thought I was going to get into coaching. Graduated with a history degree and thought that I was going to go and be a history teacher, and realized about halfway through my first semester of grad school that I'd way rather teach baseball than teach history, and reached out to some people and was lucky enough to get a job as the pitching coach at Swarthmore College. This was back in 2009, the 2009 season. So spent 2 years at SWAT coaching some really academic kids. You know, I think the guys I coach now are academic. I think back to my time at SWAT, and those guys are way smarter than the guys I have now. Spent 2 years at SWAT, and then was fortunate enough to get an opportunity to be the volunteer up at Cornell in Ithaca, New York, another Ivy League school. And that is really where I made sort of the transition from being a pitching coach and a guy that pitched in college and was kind of on that side of the ball to doing a little bit of everything. You know, when I was at Cornell, I had the opportunity to work with the outfielders. I was able to work with the hitters a little bit. And I was lucky to work for a guy in Bill Wachenbach, who gave me the opportunity to learn and to work with infielders as well. And I kind of got passionate about that and really started to enjoy that. And, you know, our first year, my first year up at Cornell, we didn't have a good team. We were pretty bad that year. But then my second year, we had a really special group of seniors, some guys that, you know, were great leaders and awesome people, and ended up winning an Ivy League championship. Being a part of that was really special. And then right after that season, Coach Baretti, my current boss, I still call him Coach because he coached me when I was a freshman in college. The 18-year-old in me is still scared of him raising his voice sometimes. But, you know, he called me up and asked if I could work with infielders and hitters, and I lied and said yes. And it's worked out pretty well ever since.
Yeah, I'd say so. What last year was what? Ivy League championship number five?
Five at Columbia. Yeah.
Five at Columbia. And then you had one at Cornell. So what is it, like five of the last seven? Is that still accurate, or?
Six out of the last nine, if we're talking personally, but at Columbia, yeah, five out of the last eight seasons. You know, obviously we lost a 20 year, and then in the infinite wisdom of the Ivy League, we lost a 21 year as well, unfortunately. But, you know, I was fortunate to, I was lucky to show up in 2013 and show up to a roster that was ready to go and do some damage. And then, you know, 13, 14, 15, we won championships here. And 2018, we had a really special group of seniors, great group of positional guys, and won a championship that year. And then last year, coming off of the long hiatus, went out and probably had the second best year in program history, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, you guys had one heck of a run there in the middle of the season, not to mention, you know, how you finished in the Super and or in the regional, I should say, against two wins with Gonzaga. Yeah, it's a pretty special group. I mean, obviously me and Keith follow you pretty closely. So
yeah, you know, anytime you go on a W-19, some things are going right for you. You know, you're living right. I remember at the end of that, we were up at Cornell, and, you know, we sweep the doubleheader on Saturday, and it was April 30th, and we all go out to dinner, the coaching staff, and we're all just kind of sitting around. We look at each other and go, we didn't lose in a calendar month. You know, that doesn't happen. That's not real life. We were you get some good breaks, you get some balls that bounce your way. And, you know, we had a really great group, and it was just some special mojo. It was cool. It was a lot of fun to be a part of.
Well, let's get it kicked off with a couple questions. Obviously, you know, players are at the core of that, and really interested to get your thoughts on some player specific recruiting stuff, but we'll throw a broad one at you to start. When you're going about your business, how do you identify players? You know, kind of walk us through, you know, the different ways that you find out about players, how you evaluate them, you know, give us some insight there.
Sure. So it is a combination of a lot of hard work by our whole coaching staff. You know, I know that the recruiting coordinator title, you know, is something that is next to my name, but fortunate to work on a staff where all of us share that responsibility as far as recruiting. You know, I work for probably the most active head coach in the Ivy League. You know, Coach Baretti gets out and wants to go recruit, wants to go find guys, wants to talk to kids on the phone. Coach Cardi, Tom Cardi, who's our new pitching coach, wants to get out, wants to go find guys. So, you know, it's a lot of hard work by all of us. You know, we take a lot of pride in being responsive to players and families that reach out to us. Not all those guys are going to end up being really good players. Not all those guys are going to end up playing for us. But if you take the time to reach out to us, we feel like, you know, there's a responsibility on our end to make sure that we're communicating and letting you know where you stand or how we can see you or anything like that. So, you know, emails, you know, a way that we identify guys, reaching out to summer coaches, reaching out to trusted contacts within summer baseball, you know, guys that work within organizations from areas that we've recruited before or organizations that we've recruited before is always valuable for us. You know, I think about the West Coast and guys that we've gotten from the same travel organization or guys that we've gotten from the same area who all know somebody or, you know someone who's connected to our program. That happens often. You know, getting recommendations from high school coaches is always really valuable. And then, you know, there's old fashioned luck. You know, you get a kid showing up to camp who, you know, just looks the part and does something really, really well that day or has tools that you look at and go, yeah, that kid can play for us. You know, I've told both of you guys this story. We got our starting left fielder, a kid named Cole Hage, who is from North Dakota. He showed up to a camp his senior year, September of his senior year. You know, Cole shows up and he's all of 6'3", 230, and he runs a 6'6", 5. And, you know, I'd love to take credit for that one recruiting and tell you how brilliant I am. Dude has an aunt who lives in Astoria. We got lucky. And sometimes that's just what it takes. But, you know, trying to make sure that we're exhausting every avenue, trying to make sure that we're taking advantage of every opportunity that we can, whether it is getting kids to camp, whether it's going out to tournaments, whether it's going out to high school games. Making sure that we're trying to evaluate guys in as many settings and, you know, for as many opportunities as we can.
I remember I was at camp when Cole showed up, and we had Eric on last week and we were talking about it. And I was like, you know, I remember when he put his Columbia camp t-shirt on, and I walked across the field. I was like, who's the JUCO transfer? And Coach was like, that's a senior in high school. And I was like, okay, like what position is he going to be playing next year? Like that's what it is.
So after camp, I remember the recruiting conversation that we had as a staff. You know, Soup was still on staff, and you know, me and him and Coach are texting, and you know, we want to be specific, and like you always got to fill certain needs, and you know, the question comes up like, oh, where's Cole gonna play? And Coach Baretti, in his infinite wisdom, you know, he's usually the smartest guy in the room, no matter what he tells you, just texts back, says, guys, look at that athlete. Let's not overthink this. And, you know, kid shows up on campus and he's been just an unbelievable player for us.
Yeah, he's been pretty good.
Talented. He's special. He's special. They don't make too many like that. It's awesome.
But it is. That is the fun part that, you know, as a coach you love. But I also think as something that might not necessarily be known that by and large is that like you do luck into players like that from a coaching staff standpoint, a recruiting standpoint from time to time. It's not going to happen every year, but you do like you do this long enough, you're going to luck into a dude who is that good. And, you know, you're like, thank gosh he showed up at our camp.
Yeah. This is amazing. Thank God I called that guy. Right. No, it's. You know, and you know, there are other stories like that even on our roster. You know, I was out in Arizona in July a couple of years ago to go follow around a position player. Funny enough, actually a young man who's playing for the University of San Francisco, where Eric is now. I was following him around, and I happened upon a GBG game, and there's this dude on the mound just rolling in 88 mile an hour bowling balls. And I'm like, oh, that's Derek Yu. We were on him in the fall. And I just happened to show up at his game, and he had made a huge jump. He'd gotten better. And, you know, I think 2 weeks later, Derek was committed.
Now, you know, I think that you lean into it a little bit there when you're talking about Cole. You know, what specific traits, and I know you work with infielders and hitters, so you don't have to get super broad with the, you know, every single position standpoint, but when you are recruiting let's call it a middle infielder, like what traits are you looking for in those players?
It has evolved. You know, I remember being really like specific and picky about some stuff and wanting to see guys do certain things that I like to coach that I feel are good sort of benchmarks or you know, positions for them to be in. But I was talking with Andy earlier, right before we started recording, about our starting shortstop now, Andy Blake, and going to see him play. And I don't remember if he fielded a ground ball at the Legion game that I was at, but Andy was the loudest guy on the field. He was talking to everybody, which is his nature. But he moved without the ball really well. Like he was always in the right place. And there's something to be said for that. You know, there's something to be said for finding that infielder who is always around the ball, you know, who's always there to make a play. It shows that, you know, they're well coached. It shows that they understand the game. They have some instincts for it. So I think that's probably the most important thing when I go to a game. You know, obviously in a showcase, you're looking for guys that can, you know, make a certain amount of throws. I'm big on throwing touch. We talk all the time about just playing good catch. If we can play good catch, we have a chance to be really good as infielders at our level. And so, you know, watching guys make throws across the infield, you got to be able to hit your first baseman in the chest. That's just, you know, if you want to play infield at a high level, that's kind of one of those absolutes. You know, being able to pick it up with a certain amount of, you know, obviously, you know, being able to have good hands and make those plays is really important. But, you know, having game instincts, watching guys play and seeing them in the right, you know, guys who happen to be in the right place at the right time all the time are winning players. Those are guys that are going to help you be really successful.
It's a really good, it's an interesting insight because I think it kind of leads into, the metrics are super popular right now, right? And me and Keith have talked about this a couple times, and like they matter. They're a piece of the puzzle, and you know, there's certain things physically you need to be able to do in order to compete at specific levels. You know, it's going to be really tough to play shortstop if you run a 7-7. You know, it's going to be really tough to, you know, play third base if you don't have the, you know, the requisite arm strength and all that kind of stuff. But I'd be interested to hear how much those metrics play into your evaluation and at what point do they not matter as much in the evaluation process.
So it's interesting. We've gone back and forth at our camps. We have had some years where we have a radar gun on infielders and some years where we don't. I personally hate the radar gun for infielders. I think it's the most overrated thing. I think it creates bad habits for guys. You know, obviously having extra arm strength is always going to be good. Guys are going to be able to make plays that other guys can't because of their arm strength. But when we're talking about a showcase ground ball, what it turns into is, you know, a three hopper that you pick up and you take four steps towards first base, not in a four step alignment, but like four legit running start steps and you fire it. And that's not showing me your infield arm strength. The metrics matter. You know, I think the biggest one that we look at is in recruiting is probably the run tool. Not that we're looking exclusively for burners. We don't need to find guys that run a 6-6, but if we can have a team full of guys that are between a 6-8 and a 7-1, we're probably going to be able to run a little bit. And we're probably going to be able to utilize that athleticism offensively and defensively, you know, being able to move guys around. You know, if you're a third baseman and you run a 6-9, you can probably go be a pretty good right fielder because the guy who's playing third base for us right now is pretty good. And you might have, you know, an opportunity out there to go run around and hit for us. It's not necessarily as much in the recruiting process, but we have also started to really look at, you know, bad ball data. How hard do we hit it and how do we hit it? You know, is it a ground ball? Is it a line drive? Is it a fly ball? Is it too high? You know, we put leaderboards up for our guys based on our data and what we have available to us throughout the year. It's no shock that our guys who lead the team in OPS and who lead the team in a whole bunch of really important offensive categories are the dudes that are on the barrel most often, and those barrels are leading to balls being hit on a really good line drive trajectory. So, you know, we're fortunate to have TrackMan. We have that on for some of our camps, and we'll get pitching metrics, and those things are important. We can talk more about the pitching side if you guys want to delve into that. But, you know, from an offensive standpoint, it is a little bit more art than science. It's watching a kid play and saying, hey, is he, you know, is that a winning player? Is that someone that is going to fit in with what we do? Is that someone who's going to help us win championships? Being 6'2", left-handed, and being able to drive the ball helps a lot too. So if we have more of those, we'll find them.
For sure. No, I think that's some really good insight into it, because it is interesting. There's, you know, the velocity piece for pitchers is a lot more tangible than arm strength for an infielder, because you, to your point, all right, you can throw the snot out of it across the infield, but can you throw from multiple angles? What's your quick release look like? You know, what is it, you know, what does it take to get you wound up to throw at top velocity? Right. Like, there's something to be said about a guy who can just get his hand moving quick, and it doesn't take a ton of effort for the ball to carry.
For sure.
You know, the game speed stuff.
The best thing for me watching an infielder is watching him play against a very athletic team, watching him play against a high school team or a summer team that's full of guys who all run 4 or 5 down the line. You know, at 4 or 5 at the college level is like a very average to below runner. But if that guy's not rushed, if that guy is just on time and like everything's moving smooth and it works, that guy's a chance to be a pretty good college infielder.
I mean, I guess my next question is going to lead into a little bit more of what happens from the matrix standpoint. But, you know, how do you guys at Columbia value or do you not necessarily, as much as maybe some other programs might, what rankings are out there, be it, you know, PG or PBR or any of those? You know, how much does that factor into the guys that you're going to, you know, legitimately try to go after from a recruiting standpoint?
Zero. It's something that, you know, we used to laugh about it. You know, we had a kid who graduated in 2018, Randall Canamaro, who came in and started as shortstop for us as a freshman. Big 6'3" kid, could really hit. Was just like gifted bat to ball. He was a barrel dragger, so our park was perfect for him. He would hammer sliders to left and hit fastballs off the right center field wall. Randall was a California kid, and I think he might have gone to one perfect game showcase when he was in like 8th or 9th grade. I don't think Randall was graded on PG. You know, it was not something that was on his radar. That is not something that we recruit to. That's not something that we worry about. If we happen to find some guys that end up with some really good rankings when it's all said and done, great. You know, we're fortunate to go to the PBR future games. And, you know, every year you're going to recruit some guys that are at that event. And by virtue of being at that event, they will be more highly ranked within their state, because it's a really good event. You're going to find some dudes there. But we're not going there because the highly ranked players, you know, to pull highly ranked players out of it. We're there to find the best players for our program. And that's always going to be the case. You know, I still have an email in my outbox that I've yet to send to Coach Baretti. He and I were going back and forth about some recruiting stuff. And he basically said, like, hey, I don't care about rankings. We're not looking for the most highly ranked players. And I took like deep offense to that, because it's never been our style as a program. It's never been how we recruit. Personally, it's never been how I recruit. And so like, I was like really affronted. So I don't know if that part's going to stay in, but coach, I still have that email sitting in my outbox. When you fire me, I'll show it to you one day.
Oh, that's beautiful. Another piece on the evaluation portion, right? When you're going to watch a position guy, how many times do you like to see a guy before you make a decision? And I know this is variable. Sometimes you go watch a guy and you're like, okay, that's my guy. But in a perfect world, if you have the time that you're looking for, how many at-bats, kind of ballpark, like where do you feel comfortable with your evaluation based on how many times you get a chance to see a guy?
So I think for an infielder or a catcher, it's a little bit different. You know, when I say infielder, you know, for a shortstop or a catcher, it's a little bit different because I think you get a lot of opportunities within one game to see them showcase a broad set of skills and to do a lot of different things that can theoretically help your program. So the number on those guys is a little bit lower. You know, I think if we can see a catcher play twice, if we can see a shortstop play two, maybe three games, you'll get a pretty good idea. And it depends on the guy. You know, you roll out and I remember, you know, I'm going to keep name dropping guys from our program. Sorry. But, you know, Julian Berry showed up to camp in, I want to say it was the summer of 2016, right before his senior year. And Jules made such an impression on coach with the hit tool, with the way that he played in the camp games, with the way that he carried himself. Like, we went out and saw that kid more. We didn't need to. We were taking that kid. You know, it's something where, again, you know, it's more art than science. You know, you sort of know it when you see it. You know, you know what a kid like Wes Eberle is going to look like seeing him once. You know, I remember seeing Wes for the first time in Georgia when he was playing for Chet Lemon's Juice, and, you know, he's behind home plate and, you know, probably weighed about 30 pounds less than he does now. And first inning goes out there and like pops a 195 in between, and it's right on the bag. And I'm kind of looking around going, no one else is here to see this kid. And you know, like, it's like, yeah, that's a yes. That kid's going to play for us.
No, it makes sense. I mean, it's hard. The fickle thing about recruiting is that it's never really that straightforward of an answer, right? We get parents and players who, well, how many times are they going to want to see me? Or do I need to go to this camp? And the answer is always, it's almost always yes, but maybe not.
Right. And because some of it's also how good do you, you know, and I don't want to make it about results, but how good do you play on that day?
Yep.
You know, what kind of impression do you make on that day? And we've missed on guys because we've seen them on the wrong day. We've missed on more guys than I'd like to, you know, talk about because maybe we didn't see him on the right day, or maybe only one guy from our staff saw him. And that was something else I wanted to touch on. Like, it isn't necessarily about seeing him a bunch of different times, but for us, because it's a national recruiting base, if we can have two members of our staff see a guy on different days and we both come to the same conclusion, pretty good chance that that guy is good enough to play for us and really help us.
No, that's some really interesting insight, and you kind of alluded to that earlier, but I know Coach Brady's super active, you know, that he likes to get out and cross-check on guys, and I know that's an important thing for multiple people on your staff to see a guy, and I don't know if it's like that everywhere. I was lucky enough to work for most recently for Brian Murphy at William & Mary, and he was very similar in the way that he approached it, is that it wasn't that he had to see guys, because it wasn't about him being the decision maker. It was that I want to see the guy so that we can have a quality discussion about where this guy fits. And it's empowering as an assistant to be a part of that, because you feel like, you know, that it's truly a team decision. You know, it's a group of coaches working to try to find the right answer.
And it also, you know, it depersonalizes it sometimes. We as coaches can get really possessive of our guys. We as coaches can feel like, man, I went out and saw this kid, and you know, I stayed out, you know, I stayed for the 11 p.m. slot at Diamond Nation, and I found this guy, and like, this is the guy. Like, you get really attached to that thing. Whereas when you have multiple members of your coaching staff see a guy, it sort of diffuses some of that. It spreads it around. And it allows for everyone to have some input and for all, you know, all the members of the staff to point out the things the kid does really well, the things that the kid needs to get better at, and then determine how does that fit for us and what we need.
Yeah, with the, excuse me, I think that that's probably the best method, really. As much as you want to say that you want to see, you know, I want to see him take 10 at-bats and blah, 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 you'll see that in 2-3 games. You know, but there were guys that I saw when I was coaching that, you know, to your point, I didn't need to go see another time. Like, I'd see them once, and you see how they carry themselves, you see how they go about their business, you see that they're on the barrel, you see them play against, you know, pretty good competition that we're going to see. And it's like, all right, this dude could, he can come in and compete right now. I'm not saying he's going to play right away, but if he continues on this path, he's going to be competing as a freshman, and it's going to be really good. And I think it became a little bit different too during COVID with, you know, you had to be a little bit more video recruiting heavy, and not to say that that's, you know, I think it opened up, you know, it's no secret I was at RPI. I can't get out to the West Coast multiple times a year. I can only go out there once, you know, so I did rely on video a little bit more than, you know, I probably would like to, but, you know, we hit on some of those guys, and, you know, it's not a exact science. I think as coaches, we look at it, you know, if you're hitting more than you're missing, you're very happy. And that could be at a 60% clip, that could be at a 70% clip. You know, if you're hitting more than you're missing, you're doing really good. So the big thing, you know, I guess kind of the next question I'm going to ask you, and I have a relatively good idea, and I think our listeners will probably be able to figure out that we all know each other pretty well, but what character traits, you know, do you guys value at Columbia, and how do you go about evaluating them?
So I'll start with the second part first. How do we evaluate it? How do we kind of go about determining if a kid is the right fit? Biggest thing, especially with the modern recruiting things going earlier, getting guys to campus and having them sit down with coach and getting to know them. Seeing how they interact with coach, hearing their answers to some questions that we have. Sorry, food just showed up. Dog is pretty excited about it. Seeing how they react to questions that we have for them about what they want. I'm going to give away the game a little bit here. You know, when we ask a guy like, hey, what do you want out of the game? What do you want out of baseball? We're looking for something. And for us, we're not looking for guys that want an Ivy League education. We're not looking for guys that want to go to an Ivy League school. We want guys that want to come to Columbia because of what we have built here, because of what specifically Coach Beretti has built here, as far as our culture, as far as the level of competitiveness that we bring to everything that we do. And Keith, you know, you just talked about hitting at a 60 or 70% clip, and, you know, we're certainly not perfect. We don't hit at 100% every year, talent wise and not always makeup wise, but more often than not, if we're hitting, you know, at 80% on that makeup side, we have a chance to be really good because we're going to have a competitive roster. We're going to have kids that push one another. And we're going to have an environment where guys are going to be supportive of each other, who are going to care about each other, love each other, but also want to push the guy next to them for playing time. And that matters a lot to us. Going backwards a little bit to the first part of the question, kind of what we value, you know, we value really high level competitors. And that's harder and harder to judge. You know, that's something that is challenging to see in a showcase. It's challenging to see even in a one game sample, unless it's like crazy level competitiveness. And we're lucky to have some of those guys, but we're looking for guys that want to strive to be their best. You know, coach uses the word strive all the time, and it's striving on the field, but it's also striving in the classroom and wanting to be the best they can be and have the best opportunity that they can on that end of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the big thing, especially with the academic end of college baseball, like Andy and I have talked about this before. I don't think people really realize how competitive it is in the Ivy League and the Patriot League, and then, you know, especially the Division III academic world, like, you know, you're getting really, really good baseball players. You know, and it's as evidence as, well, you know, what you guys have been able to accomplish at Columbia. I mean, you're in the regional final last year with Virginia Tech, you know, beating some really good teams. And that's not to say you lucked into it. It's because of, you know, what you have been able to build and the guys you get in there. But, you know, Andy and I have, like I said, talked about this. There's the competitive nature of college baseball right now is as good as it's ever been, you know, and just because you're, you know, at an Ivy League school or a higher academic school doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you're at a lower level. You know, if anything, it's a little bit raised from a stakes standpoint with the academics and things that those kids have to handle. They generally have to be a tad bit tougher. You know, but like Andy can tell you, we'd used to joke about this all the time when we were in college. Like, we were at Marist, like, you'd roll in and play Brown or Columbia or Penn or whoever, and it was like, got to beat them on the field. So they're gonna beat us in life. That was the joke we had, you know. But it was, you know, it was those, like, they were still super competitive games, and those kids were good then, and that league continues to be really good from a baseball standpoint.
For sure. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's funny kind of relating this question and what we're talking about now to what we were talking about earlier. How do we find guys? And when we call a summer coach or we go to a game and we go interact with the summer coach, like, hey, I'm here to see the shortstop. Like, what's his deal? Really good player. Yeah. No. He's awesome. Hey, let me also tell you about our backup left fielder. Dad's a doctor. Mom's a lawyer. Money's not an issue. Kid's the valedictorian. And we still get that, you know, no offense to the valedictorians of the world, but usually they don't hit so good. You know, usually they're not always the guys that are going to roll the barrel for you.
You're not wrong. I made this. This is something I actually said, and I don't coach anymore, so I'll say this. But I told my team through 2019, my first year as being the head coach, like, we had a good year. We get the grades at the end of the year. We were like a 3-6 as a team. And I was like, yo, I'm looking for us to be like a 3-1, 3-2.
Yeah. Let's knock this off a little bit. Let's slow it down.
The lower the GPA, generally the more wins we have here. Like, I'm not saying let's get bad, but, you know, let's, you know, we could take a B+ here and there somewhere and get us down to like a 3-1, and maybe we're at 25 wins. I don't know.
But it's also about, you know, making sure that people understand, you know, and Keith, I think, you know, you just said it, like, we're looking for baseball players first and foremost. We're looking for guys that are great ball players who happen to be very good students. We're not looking for the great student who also happens to play baseball and he also plays the tuba and he's also in student government. That kid's awesome. That kid is going to have an unbelievable life and he's going to do great things. He might not be for us right now. But the kid that, you know, is really dedicated to the craft, the kid that is really invested in the baseball side of things and who understands the value of the education and sees that the baseball can be played at a really high level, regardless of what league you're in. That's the kid that we want, you know, the kid that sees us beat, you know, Alabama earlier this year in a 2 out of 3 series, and says, hey, you know, that. They play a really good brand of baseball. Like, my grades are pretty good. I'm pretty bright. Like, I want to pursue that. And, you know, striving to be the best that they can be, you know, going back to that word again, coach uses it all the time. Finding strivers, guys that want to overachieve.
Yeah. And I think you know, it's interesting. You use the same phrase that, you know, Carl used when I coached under him for my first 5 years at RPI, is that, you know, yes, we are a high academic school and we're, you know, RPI is obviously a STEM engineering based type school, but, you know, we're not looking for engineers who want to play baseball. We're looking for baseball players who want to study engineering. And they're like, there's a distinct difference in that. And I think that is, you know, that's something that as coaches that, you know, we look for and try to parse out during the recruiting process. And, you know, I agree with you. There's nothing wrong with a kid who, you know, plays the tuba and does all the, you know, is the valedictorian and also plays baseball, you know, but there is a difference between that kid that, you know, really, really focuses and wants to get better and be the best version of himself as a baseball player, while also being able to do that as a student is a different kind of animal. And, you know,
no doubt.
trying to find that and being able to find that is really, you know, what you're trying to get to during this process.
It's hard.
I think the one thing too, and you know, you can elaborate on a little bit more, like one of the questions that I was going to ask too is, you know, how important to you guys is an honest evaluation from a high school or summer coach, you know, during the process?
It matters a lot. We still call and email high school coaches about every guy that we're recruiting for the most part. And that tends to be a little bit less about who they are as a player. It tends to be much more about who they are as a person. You know, what does Jimmy do really well? What kind of leadership qualities does he have? How does Jimmy fail? You know, like, how does that kid deal with taking the 0-for-3? How does that kid deal with, you know, whatever hardship might present itself on the field? You know, hey, what are mom and dad like? You know, we're going to get an idea of what mom and dad are like when they show up for the visit, but, you know, people can pretend to be somebody else for 3 hours when they're walking around with me. You know, trying to make sure that we're getting the right kids and also the right families into our program. And, you know, the high school coaches are around these kids every day. The high school coaches are with these kids, not just on the field, but obviously, you know, in the classroom, in the hallways, and they see if you're a bully. They see if you're, am I allowed to curse? If you're kind of a shitbird,
yeah.
You know, they can tell you exactly who that kid is. You know, it doesn't happen often, but every now and then we'll get a high school rec that is really lukewarm and we'll be like, oh, that's interesting. And then, you know, maybe two or three conversations into the recruiting process, you talk to the kid and, you know, he kind of MFs his high school coach and, you know, you just get sort of stood up and you're like, oh, things are starting to track. This is all coming together. You know, getting that honest evaluation from high school coaches is really important. I don't mean this in a disrespectful way. I don't mean this in a derogatory way. Summer coaches are employed to get players to college. And so their evaluation and their view of things comes with just a certain bias. And there are guys that we trust. There are guys that we will always call. There are guys that we know will give us the real story on a kid. I can think of a West Coast guy right now who's awesome and who, you know, will tell you if a kid is soft or not, in so many words. But, you know, it's something where you need to be a little bit more discerning from a coaching perspective. You need to be a little bit more discerning about how you interpret those recommendations versus the high school coach recommendation.
Yeah, the character piece is, it's one thing for a coach to, you get the hyperbolic coach who, you know, he tells you a kid's 80, you know, 85 to 88 with a good breaking ball. You know, you drive 4 hours to see him and he's 80 to 82. And like, you're not even in the same ballpark. That's one thing. But another thing is a coach not giving you the straight answer on what type of kid he is, right? What kind of teammate is he? You know, is he there to win as a player or is it about him? And I know that stuff just doesn't really, those guys have a tough time when they get to college, because when you get to college and you're out of these summer ball rankings and you're out of these summer ball tournaments where a lot of it is super individual based, you're all wearing the same uniform, but everybody knows you're going there to show off.
Right.
When you get to college, it's binary. You win or you lose, and you're judged on your wins and you're judged on your losses. Nobody cares if you went 4-for-5 with 2 bolts, but you got walked off on. When you get on the bus and you have a kid who's worried about that, that's the wrong kid.
Can I push back on one thing you just said?
Yeah.
It is absolutely binary. You're 100% right. But for my money, and I'd like to think for our program, it's binary about, are you a good teammate or not? It's binary about how good a team, you know, yes or no. Like, are you invested in your success and the success of the people around you? And that means holding guys accountable. That means pushing yourself. That means being able to have honest feedback given to you and give honest feedback. And that's a really hard thing to do. I don't, like, when I was 19 years old, I don't think I was a very good teammate. I don't think that I was capable of a lot of stuff that we ask our guys to do now. But that's where the binary comes in for us. because the wins and losses, if you have a team full of guys that are awesome teammates and they're good players, that other stuff takes care of itself. The winning and losing will figure itself out. And if you really buy into that piece of the process, you're going to find yourself winning a lot more than you lose.
It's interesting that you talk about how important this is when you reach out to coaches, because obviously we talk about guys that kind of fit the academic and the athletic bill. And rarely is your first question to either of us about whether the kid's good enough, right? Like, we have a relationship where if I call you, you know, the kid's probably worth doing some homework on. It's almost always, what can you tell me about the kid? Like, have you seen him play yet? Like, does he play hard? That kind of stuff. And I don't know if, I'm not sure if it's as widely known as it should be, how much that recommendation and that information can impact an evaluation. I know it's really important to you guys. And I know it's why, it's a big reason that you have the culture and the success that you have, is because you do take extra time to really dig into guys and figure out who they are, because that's what drives your program. And that's what gets you to those wins and losses. And it's, you know, from an outsider looking in, knowing the program the way I do, plays a huge role in why you guys are as competitive as you are every year.
Right. And, you know, you talked about the relationship and the trust that we have. And so, like, when you guys call me on somebody, they're going to be worth my time, whether they are a yes for us automatically on talent or not. Like, that's up to us, but, like, they're probably going to be a pretty good player. But, you know, I remember, you know, you've called us on a couple guys, Andy, and, like, going out and seeing one of them play and, like, calling you right after the game and being like, this is easy. Like, this is a yes. And being really excited about it. And, you know, even the guys that maybe are short talent wise, when I ask you, like, hey, is this kid for us? Is this kid, you know, our kind of person, our kind of player? Then I go out and watch that kid play. Yeah, he could probably compete for us because of how competitive he is. He could probably go out and, like, do some stuff because of the way he handles himself. And, you know, that stuff just matters so much. And that's another piece of the puzzle. As an assistant coach, I need to know who I'm recruiting for. You know, whatever I do, whatever I help to accomplish at Columbia, my guess is that I'm not going to outlast Brett Baretti. And so helping him build the program and understanding and bringing in guys that are going to be able to play for him. And, you know, he's awesome to play for, but he's not always easy to play for. You know, like, I got to understand who my boss is and what he wants.
Let me ask you this. You go to a game watching guys play. What are some things that are red flags for you, right?
As an infielder, you should never be the last guy on the field between innings. Like, even if you make the last out or you're on base, like, there should be some tempo. There should be some hop in between. You know, you gotta run the bases hard. You know, I don't want to make it sound like the early 2000s Robinson Cano debates around, you know, Yankee world, where it's like, oh, he doesn't run hard. But, like, you're a high school kid. Like, get down the line, man. You're not playing 162 of these. You know, you can give me your best 90 time a couple times a day. You know, finding guys that are going to do that, finding guys that are going to be involved in the game. Not into pouting. You know, you make an error, you make an out, or you punch out or whatever at the plate. You know, you don't need to, like, be excited about it, but also, like, don't throw your helmet, don't hang your head. You know, it's okay to move on to the next pitch. And trying to find guys that can do that. And, you know, we do that within our program. Like, we work on the mental skills, we work on the mental game as much as we can to help guys develop those skills, because not everyone comes to us with those skills. Those skills are hard to develop. And so, you know, I don't want to make it sound like we have a team full of, you know, robots who are, like, running hard all the time and who are absolutely dialed in every single pitch. It's not the case, but I think with some help and with some coaching, both on the baseball side and on the mental side, like, we are able to help guys develop those mental skills to overcome whatever temporary failure you face on the field. So, like, finding high school guys that have some of that ability, finding guys that can bounce back quicker, that's really useful.
Good.
Good.
How much, I mean, this is a little bit of a loaded question, but I guess how much, you know, how much weight do you guys put on multiple sport athletes versus the baseball specific or baseball only type guys that you're looking to recruit?
It ebbs and flows. It sort of also depends a little bit on the area that you're recruiting from. You know, for us, we've done very well out in California. And it is rare, I shouldn't say rare, it is more rare to find the multi-sport athlete out in California, especially at some of the high schools that, you know, run fall programs on the baseball side of it and who, you know, those kids are outdoors all the time. Like they have an opportunity to play 70 games a year just for their high school or their club team. Like they should be doing that. If that's what they want to do, they should be playing that much baseball. You know, the flip side of it is when we get our cold weather guys, when we get our kids from the Northeast, you know, yeah, it's awesome to find kids that play multiple sports because I think you learn how to compete, you learn how to move your body, you learn how to find something within yourself that's going to get you going that day. You know, we had a kid, 2021 grad, Jack Chernow, little left-handed hitting second baseman from Jersey. And Jack played soccer in high school, you know, soccer baseball kid. And it served him really well defensively because his feet were awesome. Like he could move in really small spaces and, you know, was super efficient with his moves and turned himself into a really good infielder, I think largely because of his soccer experience. You know, we have a kid now who's really similar, but he was a high school wrestler. And, you know, you watch him go back and catch a pop-up and tumble and do a somersault and pop right back up. You're like, oh yeah, that kid wrestled at 155 in high school. He knows exactly how to move his body. You know, it's really useful. It's really, really valuable. I think back to probably one of the better defensive players we've ever had come through our program in Dave Vandercook, who's the recruiting coordinator at Manhattan College now. Cookie was a high school quarterback, and you could put Dave anywhere on the field right now and tell him to hit the first baseman in the chest, and he would do it. Like just has throwing touch because he was a high school quarterback. This was always a big Pete Mackey thing. Find high school quarterbacks and 3-point shooters because they know where the ball is going. Like it's in their fingertips. It's just sort of this innate thing. And I'm sure Pete has more science behind it now that he has the nerd cave with the Minnesota Twins. But like it's a real thing, you know, being able to find guys who know how to compete differently, who know how to use their bodies differently, and who can maybe have a transferable skill set from their other sport to baseball.
Love it.
With the multi-sport guys, do you think there's any value in it, given that baseball does have that kind of individual component to it? Like being a high school basketball player, a football player, a soccer player, that you're playing a sport where you need to be really in sync with the other players on the team. And, you know, you've got set plays and there's a different level of camaraderie and it's a different type of competition. Do you feel like any of that translates? Like, do you find that some of the multi-sport guys have a tendency to be better teammates? Is there any correlation there?
There may be some. I haven't actually thought about that. I think that they tend to be better competitors. I have grown to loathe the word train. We have guys that train to play baseball. Guys train in facilities, guys train to hit velo, guys train to throw really hard. And it's all really valuable. It's all skills, you know, tools that you need to continue to climb the ladder. But you're not actually practicing playing baseball. You're not actually practicing playing the game. And I'm at risk of sounding like the guys that the three of us probably mocked 10 years ago. Wow, the game isn't as good. The kids don't know what they're doing. Coaching high school baseball players or coaching freshmen, you know, who have just gotten out of high school, it's harder now because they're worse at baseball. They're way better at baseball. Like they're way better at baseball, but they're so much worse at baseball. Like they're worse at playing baseball, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense.
You know, I think that those multi-sport guys where they might not have the same kind of refined skills or the tools may not always be as loud because they haven't trained. You know, they didn't spend an off season going through a bat speed program and really being able to move the barrel. But like, put a dude 60 feet, 6 inches away from him, and I would say more often than not, like, they're going to find a way to compete and win that one-on-one battle. Or they're going to find a way to be, you know, do what you need them to do within that context. And kids that train, it isn't always productive. I think it takes us further away from playing the game at a really high level. And some of that is our fault. Some of that is college coaches' fault, because we want velocity. We want guys that hit the ball hard. We want to go out to these showcases and see guys. We want to go out to some of these tournaments that we know winning and losing doesn't matter. And we go evaluate guys there. And it's a systemic problem. So it's probably not going to get solved here tonight. But like, you know, baseball player industrial complex is not good for the game. It's great for skills, but it's not good for the product on the field. I just
not to be confused with the military industrial complex.
They're two different things, but they are connected somehow. And I'm sure we could get there if you give me and Keith long enough.
Two history majors.
You talk about the freshmen that are coming in and the skill sets, and I agree with you. Like, I think from a skill set standpoint, like, a lot of dudes are way further along than when I played, when Andy played, when you played. Like, I mean, we're all generally the same age, but like, the skill sets that you see in guys that, you know, I used to coach, guys you coach now, like, far more advanced than it was when we played. There's a lot of things that go into that, and we could talk to, we're blue in the face, but, you know, what are probably two huge things that you guys have to teach freshmen, maybe even three, when they get to campus? Outside, like, and playing the game is obviously, you know, I think, you know, the people who listen to this who do coach understand what you're saying, but, you know, there's a vast difference between being able to hit a baseball, you know, 105 miles an hour off of a tee and actually being able to do it in the game. Like, those are two completely different, like, they're related skills, but that they have to show up in game. You can't just do it in a showcase and then be like, meh, it's never going to show up in game. You know, so what would you guys say, you know, what would you say you think that the two or three biggest things for freshmen that they need to understand or be taught when they get to campus?
So for positional guys, I'll speak about infielders specifically. It's connected to pitching as well. The speed of the game, just like how fast things move, how we need to move our feet in order to be able to throw that base runner out. How much time do I have when I pick this ball up to make a clean 6-4 feed versus getting around that ball and driving through and making it a flip? And I'll connect it to the pitching side. The speed of the game there, just controlling the running game. Like, hey, we can't be a 2-count every time we come set and then be a 1-5. Guys might steal some bases against you. You know, teaching those guys some of the finer points about that, and it kind of goes back to what I was talking about, like, in terms of playing the game. You know, how do we slide step? How do we take that 1-5 and make it a 1-3? Because if we're a 1-3, you know, it's not great, but a lot of teams are going to have a hard time really running against you if you're a 1-3, if you vary your timing. And then the last thing is base running. Just, you know, we really focus on it. It is a huge teaching point within our program. And Andy and I were at a game yesterday, and I don't think that base running is coached terribly well at most levels getting up to college.
I don't think I could agree more with the base running aspect. I thought that was something that was very undervalued. Maybe, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's fair to say, but you know, at least that's what it seems like when your guys get to you. You know, they don't necessarily understand how to go first to third. They don't know how to score. I would say you're scoring on a double with two outs and a runner on first, and people looked at me like I had 10 heads. Like, no, dude, like you're scoring. Like, I'm wheeling you. There's two outs. We're scoring this run. You know, so I think that, you know, but it's things like that at the college level is that wins and loses you baseball game, you know, and I think that that's, you know, I've said this before on previous podcasts, you never know what's going to win you a baseball game. So it's, you know, it could be that guy who goes first to third and then scores on a sack fly in the fourth, wins you that game.
It's huge.
You know, so it's something that is very undervalued, I think, until you get to college. And then there's a very steep learning curve when it comes to, you know, the base running aspect of playing college baseball. And it is a faster game. And, you know, you got to be able to, you know, the more kind of chaos you can create a little bit, the more you find yourselves in some positive spots for your team that may put the other team at a disadvantage. And at the end of the day, it's about scoring more runs than the other team. So,
and just connected to that, you know, I talked about the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, the teaching point that I think we have the most work to do with our incoming guys, with their swings, is more about their swing decision, more about swinging at good strike versus just swinging at strike, you know, swinging at pitches that they're going to do damage. And, you know, the first question that we ask a guy coming out of the cave after a round where he might not be happy with the results is like, hey, were you swinging a good pitch? Because, you know, for so long, I think at the high school level, most guys are able to get away with swinging at not good pitches, but it's not good velocity or it doesn't move the right way. And they're just bigger and stronger and like they can drive the ball. And, you know, then you see the light go on sometimes when a kid takes a great round of BP, you know, five out of the six balls that he hits are torched and one hop in the wall or hitting off the wall. And like, he comes out of the cage like, hey man, swinging good pitches. Yeah, I did. yeah, you're capable of doing that. So like, let's strive to do that more.
Right. You know, and I used to say this all the time, and I find myself saying this quite a bit, is, you know, every time you level up, it gets harder, right? Like, you have, like, if you go from high school to college, like, there's only 7.5%-ish of kids that are going to go play in college. Like, it's now just gotten harder because you're playing against really, really good baseball players. And then if you are fortunate enough to play professionally, like, it even gets smaller there. Like, it never actually continues to get easier. You know, so like, you have to be able to work on those things that, you know, you are deficient at that level so that you can continue to be the best version of yourself. And those are things that I think not a lot of high school kids, and I wasn't capable of thinking about this when I was an 18-year-old freshman, but like, those are the things that I got better at as I got older in college. But those are things like, if you know these beforehand, you're going to give yourself a huge leg up on the competition when you get there. Like, if you already know how to run the bases, you know how to steal bags, like, you're a step ahead. You know, if you know how to, you know, generally have an idea of how to slow the game down for yourself, like, you're going to be further ahead. You know, so I think being able to kind of understand that, like, it's going to speed up on you, and those, like, you need to do, you have to swing at better pitches. Like, that's just the reality. You know, and it's a conversation that's had in probably every program. I can't speak for everyone, but I'm going to say probably every program in the country when it comes to like, okay, why was that a bad round? Were you swinging at balls? Yeah. Okay. Solve that quad problem.
Like, moving on.
Let's not swing at balls. Right. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of value in being able to have the conversation of like, you know, these are the things that you need to be able to kind of understand and work on in order to give yourself a leg up on the competition when you get there. Because at the end of the day, when you get to college, like, you're still competing for playing time, you're competing for a spot, you're competing, whatever it is. And if the flip side to it is, if you continually get better, you're going to either push the guy in front of you to get better, which is going to make you a better team, or you're going to pass him and then have more playing time, which is likely going to make you a better team. So like, it's a win-win all the way around. Like, it might not necessarily be the best thing for you, you know, personally in the short term, but in the long run, you're going to end up playing a lot more than you would have, you know, if you can show up and compete every day and know the things you have to compete on to get better at.
No question. You know, I think it's a really good point talking about, like, it's this continual leveling up, it's this continual next step. And you know, that's true of the guys that, you know, we have committed. You know, I remind guys after they commit and, you know, they're all excited and everything. And it's like, all right, cool. Now we have to get better. You know, now we got to get better at these things. We need to continue to improve. And that's not to, you know, like you said, Keith, like, that's not to denigrate them. That's not to say, hey, you're bad at this. But it's like, you know, if you want to be the guy and come in and play shortstop for us next year, well, look at the guy that plays shortstop for us now, because he's bigger, stronger, and faster than you are. And yeah, he's 22 years old, but, you know, you need to start working on that now.
Yep. This is the physical piece is an important one for high school kids to focus on getting right, because the game will slow down a little bit if you're faster. You'll be able to control your movements better if you're a little bit stronger, which leads to better swing decisions, which leads to better throwing accuracy. And I think that I'm not like a weight room junkie with kids, but if you're not lifting weights and you're not focusing on continuously trying to get stronger, specifically as you lead into going onto a college campus, you're going to get left behind because you are playing against 22-year-olds, and there's a difference.
No question.
Big difference.
It's, you know, it is the separator, you know, in a lot of ways. I think on the field for our program, you know, we've done a good job of recruiting guys that strive to get bigger and stronger, who have the frame to get bigger and stronger. And, you know, it plays for us, you know, being able to out physical some teams, you know, not to use the word bully, but sometimes we just bully teams. It's been a recipe for success. And, you know, the weight room matters a lot.
One last question for you. Try to end this with a little bit of parting wisdom from a man who does it every day. Is, if you were going to give one, maybe two pieces of advice to a high school player as they go through the recruiting process, what would you tell somebody?
I think first and foremost, you know, be honest in your communication and expect that from the people that you're communicating with. You know, make sure that you're being really clear about where you are on your process. Make sure that the people who, the coaches that and programs that you're communicating with are open and honest about where things stand. It just simplifies things a lot. It makes it a lot easier for all parties involved. And, you know, never, I guess, kind of moving forward from that, making sure that you're taking advantage of every opportunity presented to you. That's not to say that you should go take advantage of every opportunity, but when things are in front of you, when you get a coach to come out and see you play, don't worry about going 4 for 4, but control the things that you can control. When you get an opportunity to go to a college camp, if it's a specific school, you know, if you're showing up to Columbia camp, odds are you're going to be playing in front of 5 or 6 schools. You know, you're going to be playing in front of us. You're going to be playing in front of formerly RPI. We're not inviting those bums anymore. You know, you're going to be playing in front of Vassar. You're going to be playing in front of Franklin and Marshall. You know, you're going to have a lot of opportunities. And just make sure, Taft would come if I didn't say Stevens. You know, make sure that you take advantage of what's in front of you, as far as playing hard, as far as interacting with the coaches, asking questions, getting to know people, building those relationships. And then, you know, I think the last piece of advice would be to make sure that you're clear about what you want. Be really clear about what it is that you want, because it's easy to say that you want to play Division I baseball. It's easy to say that you want to, you know, play Power 5 baseball. And it's awesome. It's cool. It's, you know, it's awesome. It's incredible, but it isn't for everybody. If you have other interests, or if you want to go do other stuff while you're in school, there are baseball programs out there at places where you can be as well-rounded and as fully yourself as you want to be. But that just might not be at certain other places, and it might not be at a certain level, and that's fine. But just be really clear and honest with yourself about what it is that you want. You know, and being, when you do that, it will provide a lot more clarity to the process, because you'll be clear about what you want and you'll be able to narrow your list a lot faster.
Any parting wisdoms, Coach Glasser, before we sign off? And
no, I think that Dan had a lot of really good points. You know, you should probably, if you miss some of them, go back and listen again. I think that we're going to end up with a lot more coaches on here over the next couple weeks. And I, you know, there's going to be a lot of things that you can learn from each and every individual guy, you know, that can kind of benefit what process you're going through and where you are in your process. Is that there's know, everyone's going to be at a different point, and nobody's one recruiting, you know, timeline is the same, you know, so being able to kind of understand that and take what you're kind of listening and learning on these and apply it to yourself. And I think we're going to find a lot more people are going to have a little bit more success when they can kind of hear it from the mouth of a lot of coaches versus, you know, just you and I up here talking all the time.
Absolutely. And Dan, can't thank you enough, man. You're the best. Best of luck to you and Coach Baratti and everybody at Columbia. You know, we follow closely. Take it easy on Coach Porter and the Rams tomorrow.
We'll do our best. No promises on that one.
Best of luck this weekend. Another Ivy League battle coming up. So can't thank you enough for your time, man. Really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Yeah, I'll call you in like 20 minutes.
All right, thank you, Dan.
Thanks, guys. Awesome.